This is an interview with Governor Victor Attia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is June 23rd, 1993, and this is tape 39, side A. Continuing on in your in the 1983 session, I just noticed you continued to have your regular weekly press conferences, but those are what you referred to as press availabilities.
Yeah, right? Media availability.
Media
right.
Availabilities. Uh-huh. And going into some of the sessions of or the issues of that session, the paper said that the legislature failed in its main mission, which was an enactment of a comprehensive new property tax relief program. What were they trying to accomplish?
Well, actually, I was trying to work very hard with them in coming up with acceptable, obviously acceptable to me, and with some hope of success in the legislature, of a method of property tax relief. I had insisted that we do something like that. And we just kept going, and I told them that if they didn't, I'd call them back. And to make the longest story short, they didn't, and I did. That is, they didn't do anything, and I called them back. But we can get to that after we finish this,
okay.
This session.
There was also a proposal to return SAFE to its old status as a state agency,
yeah.
Which was applauded by the Senate but canceled by a House committee. And you strongly opposed making it a full-fledged state agency, didn't you?
I agree. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. We worked too hard to get that job done. This is something labor wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other they figured they'd get a better deal. You know, they kept talking about private carriers and closing out accounts and taking advantage of the injured worker and that sort of thing. That was their argument.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, to me, back to competition is really healthy. And I do recall, as I said, I don't know, several interviews ago, that there was no dividend from SAFE at all, ever, until we looked like the three-way bill was going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Three-way meaning state, private, and self-insured. So that's sure I opposed it, and they meaning AFL-CIO was unsuccessful.
Legislators did endorse a measure extending the filing dates for some workers' compensation claims, strengthening the position of firefighters in obtaining benefits, and increasing the workday tax paid by employers and employees. Was there a special situation with firefighters that?
Well, they always contend that, and I don't disagree. Police and firefighters, they always consider it in a sort of a different category,
mm-hmm.
Life-threatening, stressful. You think of fire, well, the same thing with police, but firefighters are sitting around waiting for a fire, and then it hits, and all of a sudden their adrenaline has to go up, and they have to rush mm-hmm. out there. So there's, you know, and of course they're always subject to smoke inhalation and injury, and the law enforcement, obviously, always somebody was going to take a shot at them. So they always put firefighters and police in a separate category.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not disagree with that.
There was new legislation making manufacturers liable for replacing a vehicle or refunding the purchase price if a defect covered under warranty can't be fixed in four tries, or puts the car out of service more than 30 business days within the year, or 12,000 miles of purchase.
Yeah, that's an ongoing thing. And, you recall there was one term they called the Lemon Law.
That's right.
And so this is all part of it. Shoddy repair, I think we've all gone through it. You take your car and it's sometimes worse than it was when you took it in.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, that exactly happened to me one time. Way, way, long before any interview this year. Well, of course we did get it when I was younger, but my first car was a 1946 Plymouth. I took a great deal of pride in that automobile. Took very good care of it. And I had it for 4 years.
Hmm.
I'm thinking about the third year. I was going up with my friend, and we were going up to Redmond and then go up to Plano Lake and go fishing. And There was just a little tiny leak in the radiator. Nothing that bothered anything, but it just leaked a little bit. So, being meticulous, I took it in and I said, gee, would you fix this before I took my trip? I'll give you a quick of it. We went up there, went up the lake, came back from the lake, and I really wasn't paying any attention. The car always ran real well. All of a sudden, I looked at the heat thing, and you can't even see the needle. And I stopped the car. We did get on Highway 26. Got towed back to Ben. A friend of mine was in the dairy business. He fixed it well enough so I could drive it home. But what actually happened is he took the radiator out to fix this little tiny thing, put it back, put the thermostat down in upside down.
Oh,
and so the car boiled over. So now you see, if I could have gone forever
right.
without doing anything about that little tiny
thing. Yeah.
And as it was, it ruined the whole motor. And so things, you know, things like that occurred.
Did they replace it for you?
Well, it was a very contentious thing. They finally, I think they paid for the labor and I paid for parts or something like that. One of the lowest amount, but I shouldn't have had to pay for anything. But
is Oregon fairly aggressive in its pursuit of consumer legislation?
Consumer protection. And
consumer protection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Going back to, again, my general philosophy is that, remember I talked about no laws protecting people from those rascals that they elect, and I'm getting back to some people being responsible for themselves. Then I get to be into the retail rug business and understand what goes on in that field. And I'm generally of the feeling that let's not have laws on that. This is the way people learn.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, you know, if something wrong, bad happens, you just won't do business with that person anymore because you have that choice. There are times, however, where it's a very expensive fix, like the one I just described to you.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to deal with it and deal with part of it, although it was touch and go in those early days, paying my mortgage and things like that, but and a child. But others, you know, are not able to do that. So you say, okay, you know, you've got to protect at least some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you make that separation so you protect everybody. But my general theory is you can't learn. If you think you're protected, you'll never learn. You just keep going and figure the state's going to take care of you. And that's not a healthy thing. That's not healthy for the person in terms of their maturity.
Mm-hmm.
There was a proposal to restore interest rate limits on credit cards and retail charge accounts fell flat. Is this another thing to protect the consumer then, sort of along the same line?
But this, yeah, the answer is yes, but it's really strange. Because, you know, the interest rates are running pretty high. Incidentally, they still do, and nobody seems to complain too much about it. I mean, they can run as high as, 17-18%, depends mm-hmm. on where your credit card is. And people advertise our rates are lower than yours or whatever, and part of their competitive advantage. Out of all of this, and I get it, you do too, in the mail, these little inserts
right.
with fine print. And this is all done for consumer protection. Now, I can read very well, and you can too. I can with my glasses, but I don't read that stuff. I throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
When we're writing contracts, I recall down at the store. I mean, all of these forms that they send, that this is all for consumer protection. And I don't read any of that stuff. I throw it away. And my personal view is if I don't trust the people I'm dealing with, I'm not going to do business with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't have to read through all this junk. And so these are the things that some bureaucrat figures is a good idea. But I bet you not 1% of the people read it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the 1% that read it don't understand it. half of them don't understand it. So, you know, you wonder, how much do you do?
It goes back to what you were saying before about the illusion of protection.
Protection, that's right. That's a good word. The illusion is exactly right. You actually go through thinking that you're being protected. Mm-hmm. And, well, back now to my business today, I have agreements with several companies, and some of which I'm on a retainer. The longest agreement that I have, and I'm dealing with companies like Fujitsu and Seiko Epson and, you know, big companies. The longest one I have is about a page and a quarter long. You know, one was just a letter. Because we don't really, you know, if they don't like what I'm doing, or I don't feel I can represent them, you know, we can always cut it off. We don't have to. And one of the agreements, incidentally, in all these, I call them contracts, you would hardly call them a contract, and I got that actually from Morita of Sony, and obviously they write a lot of contracts. But he always has one provision in there that says if we have any disagreements, we agree to talk to each other and settle it. And I know what that all means, and I say, hey, that's a good idea, and that's in all mine. Because once you get lawyers talking to lawyers, and you can't talk with whoever you're fighting with, right. And you never get the darn thing settled, in the meantime, the lawyers get all the money. But it all comes down to trust in me. Some say it's naive, it's not naive. I've got a choice, and whoever I'm dealing with has a choice. I can say, yeah, I'll be glad to represent you, or no, I don't want to represent you. And of course, they have the same choice. No, we don't want you to represent us, or yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even if you write, and I think about this, if you write the most meticulous 30-page contract, there's still a moment of truth, split second of truth. Let's say it's a contract to buy something. You know, at what point, when you hand the money and they hand you the keys, who lets go first? You know, there's still that moment of trust.
Yeah.
I don't care how many pages you have.
Well, also in the consumer area, there was killed a measure to set up a citizens utility board to represent consumers in utility rate cases. What was that about?
There's this group called Fair Share.
Oh yeah, right.
I had some real bumpy rides with them, and they wanted that citizens utility board to represent the consumer. Well, in the back of my head, I'm saying, what consumer? Who? They're going to represent me? They don't represent me. I'm a consumer. There's a whole lot of consumers out there. Who are they going to represent? What it really comes down to is they represent their narrow interest. Their narrow interest.
Which is?
Whatever it may be. Well, normally is that you're charging too much. And if I can't pay, don't kick me out. Mm-hmm. Don't turn it off. Whether I'm responsible or not, you know, I'm a little rough on them because I had some real contentious periods of time. They wanted to meet with me. I'll tell you a couple of stories. And they're kind of pushy people. I guess that's what I sort of resent. And their way is the only way, and there's no real reasonable discussion back and forth. Anyway, they wanted to meet with me. It was their request to meet with me. Finally, I arranged for room 50, which is a large room downstairs in the basement of the Capitol building, for a Saturday morning. I went down, met with them. These are normally non-productive meetings, and I don't recall the meeting itself, but I do recall that they figured I should pay because they charged rent for this place. And I'm saying, wait a minute, it's not a meeting that I wanted to have, it's a meeting you wanted to have. Anyway, I finally said, oh, the hell with it, I'll pay for it. You know. So anyway, I did. Later on, and I recall this in an open house, they again marched in, a bunch of them, and they were demanding a meeting with me. So, you know, I'd meet with anybody, and that was not normally a problem. And although I didn't like these people. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I asked Glenn Hayden, who was then my secretary, I said, well, go get the appointment book, and we'll see what we can work out. She went back to the office. In the meantime, they got me angrier. I don't recall what triggered it. And this is something I never did before, never did after. While they're standing in the room, she comes in the room with now with the book in her hand. Glenda, forget it. I'm not going to meet with these people. I'm not going to meet with them at any time, in any way. Forget it. And they're all there in the room. I'm telling her that. I just, forget it. I'm not going to meet with you. And so that's fair share.
What did they do to provoke that?
I don't recall. They're pushy. They're demanding. They're unreasonable. You know, they say, well, let's talk about it. No, there's no talking. This is the way it's going to be, or no other way. And I don't like that. The Citizen Utility Board, though, that they were talking about, you know, when I say that they represent me,
mm-hmm.
See, that's what I basically, my opposition doesn't relate to me personally. Whose view are they going to represent? Mm-hmm. You know, how are they going to determine what my view is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not going to determine. They're not even interested in that. They're going to, it's whatever their view is.
Right.
So I oppose that. I would also tell you, now that we're somewhat on the subject, I would never meet, ever, with these demonstrators.
Mm-hmm.
They'd all, you know, they'd come up and they would demand to meet with the governor. And if they, you know, the governor won't meet with us, that kind of thing. And my answer was always the same. I would, you know, come down to the front of the Capitol building. We want to meet with you. My answer always is the same. I'm very happy to meet with you. I'm not going to meet with the whole mob. You pick two or three people,
mm-hmm.
and we'll sit down and we'll have a discussion. But there's no, you know, you have no rational discussion with a mob. I know that, it's a waste of my time.
Yeah.
It's good for the media, but it's a waste of my time. Gets you nowhere. And so that was my policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wouldn't do it. I'd say, hey, you can, you know, there's people that schedule appointments 2-3 weeks in advance. You can't march down today and say, now we want to meet with you.
Going to, say, a predecessor of yours, Tom McCall, would he have done the same thing? Basically, or would he use that as a situation, create a media event in his that would be to his advantage?
He liked media events. I think he'd pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if some people he liked and liked their cause, he'd be down there.
Mm-hmm.
If he thought he was going to get a lot of shots, I don't think he would
mm-hmm.
go down. A lot of the public officials feel they're obliged because the senator, the house member, the governor, senator, whoever, won't meet with us, you know, and they don't want to stand the heat from that kind of thing. But I just, you know, you make your policy and I believed in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm willing to talk with you. I'm willing to discuss your problem where we can rationally discuss it.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, after all the years in the legislature, when you get into committees and debates on the floor, I realized long, long ago that once emotions are all worked up, there is no reasonable or logical discussion. It just does not take place.
Yeah.
And so what's the point of it?
All right. Well, going back to what you were saying about fair share, you did sign legislation to prevent utilities from shutting off services to throughout the year if the action would jeopardize the customer's health.
That's right. That's not unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. And there was also
Excuse me a second, but there was a measuring stick.
Uh-huh.
You can't say, well, I can't afford it. Just, I can't afford it.
Right.
You know, you may go out and buy a car, and you may go to the movie, or buy packaged meals, or, you know.
Right.
But you can afford that, but you can't afford to pay your utility bill. When you have a matter of health,
mm-hmm.
that's a measuring stick. You can measure that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was this mostly people that were older?
Well, oftentimes there were those that were you know, I'd say welfare, but, you know, really needy and didn't have much money and hit on hard times. And it's tough. It's tough. It really is. And I appreciate and understand it. I'm not callous to these things. But, you know, you understand all along we're taking money from a taxpayer, they call redistribution of wealth, and giving it to somebody for some reason. And so you have to do that wisely, not capriciously, and not without some kind of a measuring stick to know how much, you know, you're getting into. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't enter in the open end, mm-hmm. where you don't know how much it's going to cost. Whatever it is, just send me a bill. I wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. Why should government do it with your tax dollar?
Right. There was also legislation for landlords that would be liable for damages if they knowingly rent premises posted by authorities as being unfit to occupy. They're prohibited from retaliating against tenants who complain about alleged violations of rental agreements, but they can cancel the rental agreement if the tenant moves out and allows someone else to move in without permission. Were you involved in any of this legislation?
These are called landlord-tenant laws.
Yeah.
While I was in the legislature, we were dealing with the question. Here again, and I'm giving you how I approached it, is that I don't want to discourage anyone from providing housing for people. Mm-hmm. So this now is the landlord. And we had a lot of laws in the book that were discouraging because there were a lot of people that would just trash a place. Mm-hmm. And leave, or you couldn't kick him out.
Right.
You had to go to court. It was a messy deal altogether. And so they say, why should I buy this? I'm not going to put it up on an apartment house. I'm not going to put my money in apartments. You know, I don't need this kind of thing. Well, then you're not in a position to provide housing. You know, because that's where it comes from. At the same time, you surely don't want to have the landlord take advantage of the tenant. Later on, you know, there's bills that were going to control the amount of increase in rents. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, this rent control business, because and some irresponsible landlords were raising rents for no reasonable or logical reason, just to make a little bit more money on the deal.
But then can't the people go elsewhere?
Yeah, but you know, that's a costly affair.
Right.
And so that, you know, these laws keep cropping up. This little bit of agitation between segments in society, they just crop up, and these are answers. In this case, the landlord-tenant deal.
It must be a difficult line for government to walk that balances between the various interest groups
It's not difficult. This is going to sound awful partisan. It's not difficult for Democrats, because usually their answer is government will take care of this. That's their general philosophy. It's more difficult for a Republican whose general philosophy is, you know, yeah, government's got to be there, but let's keep it minimal. Mm-hmm. So there's a degree of difficulty. And it's just a matter of personal philosophy. The Democrats believe very strongly in what they believe. And I, a Republican, feel very strongly the way I believe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of a contest you've got going on. This is in the broadest sense, you know. Because you've got some very liberal Republicans and very conservative Democrats, you know. So, but I'm just taking it as a whole,
right,
rather than individual by individual.
Another area of protection by the state was requiring seatbelts be used by children while riding in cars. Was that, of course, that got expanded, didn't it, to all occupants?
Yeah, it's finally passed, and that is now Oregon law. But I called a long time ago when we started talking about fallout shelters and you get a discount,
right.
And I said, hey, you know, you're going to build one just because you get a discount on your property taxes? Is that why you do it? You know, you do it for protection. You do it for the protection of your seatbelts. You know, do you have to have somebody tell you it's a law before you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you worried about your children getting injured in an accident?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is the most prevalent thought?
There was also money set aside to open up a trade office in the Far East, probably at this point in Japan. And of course, later on, you went to Japan, and we'll talk considerably about that. But You went with Frank Ivancy, didn't you, who was the mayor of Portland, or were you planning on going with him?
Well, we may have gone at the same time. I always plan my own mm-hmm. trips. And Frank may have gone. I like Frank. I think he was a good mayor, in spite of the criticism he's gotten. I think he did a good job. Mm-hmm. We may have. But back to the fact of opening an office. Again, I'm going back to my retail days.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that if you're trying to get people in Japan to do business, first of all, to find out where Oregon is, and second, do business with it, you can't do it on a hit-and-run deal. Go there for 2-3 days and come home and expect anything to happen. Because as a rug man, the people we did business with were salesmen that would call on us, you know, routinely. Mm-hmm. We'd get to know them. And there's a lot of carpet companies, but we'd only buy some of them. So I knew that. And I said, okay, we've got to have some kind of a continuing presence.
Mm-hmm.
Even when a governor goes, and he obviously can't go there for 6 or 7 months, you go on a trip and you'll come back, but we still have a continuing presence. So it was that concept that we wanted to have the mm-hmm. office in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Was that initiated by you?
Yes.
That approach?
Mm-hmm. And I opened the office finally, 1984, I think it was.
The budget also doubled the tax dollars going to the Department of Economic Development.
Mm-hmm.
That was for changing the tourism office location and setting up small business centers at community colleges, financing educational programs and high technology loans to small businesses for ports and the growing wine industry. Was that something that the administration, your administration, was pushing, or was
that's part of the continuing effort. The one thing we didn't touch on, and I don't recall which special session, and it may have been the first one or the second, I don't recall. But at the time I was cutting budgets, this is 1982 now,
mm-hmm.
I well recall that I asked for and got increases in two. One was economic development, the other was higher education.
Mm-hmm.
But back to economic development. That was a continuing, persistent through my entire 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't just an opening office in Japan. It isn't just improving the budget of economic development. It included pushing hard to get plans acknowledged, land use plans acknowledged. It included in the Department of Commerce to have one-stop permit and licensing. You know, so things that were not entirely visible, by that I mean what you would think is directly economic development, in my mind were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was included having my Economic Action Council, I called it, and these were department heads that all worked, and it wasn't just economic development, that when we had prospects, we would sit with that prospect. So there was a lot of things involved in laying the groundwork for the diversification which I wanted to accomplish as governor. So this is a piece of it.
So it was a piece of a much larger...
of my continuing.
Program.
It was a continuing program. And that's why I say in one of the 80 special sessions in 82, where I was cutting budgets, I asked for an increase in economic development.
Mm-hmm. The legislature also passed a new $95 million budget for the state police, which was up 16%.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a real problem both in parks and state police, because in previous years, highway funds could legally go to parks and mm-hmm. state police. And then again, I can't remember the year there was a vote which eliminated them, so they put them now into the general fund budget. And it was very disruptive. And that's why parks had a problem. I, as a governor, during this period of time, had a problem, you know, doing maintenance in parks and things like that. Highway has dedicated funds, and they've mm-hmm. got plenty of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, within reason, you could continue to do a good job. As a matter of fact, I think that's why Oregon parks are as good and as noted as they are, because we did that all during a period of time where